Today is September 13th, 1997. Nancy Conger will speak on the unacknowledged senses, explore balance, magnetic, solar, and other sixth senses.
Welcome, I'm Nancy Conger, and this is the fifth in a series on the senses. And I'm author, as you know, of the book Sensuous Living. Buy my book. Okay, that's over. It's in the bookstore. Shameless promotion is done. Today we're talking about the unacknowledged senses. So these are senses that don't get much press and may not even get much belief. So I'll start by talking about some that science has proven in the way that we acknowledge, and then we'll move on to others that are yet more mysterious. And to do it, what I wanted to start with is just to get an idea of the spectrum of energy, because what we've done as humans is we've given lots of names and different ideas to something that is just one continuous band of energy. And you could call it a bunch of things. The electromagnetic spectrum is today's name. So this is just a continuum of waves of energy. And down at the very bottom, there are waves as long as the distance of the Earth to the Sun. That's the longest one we know of. There's probably ones that are longer yet. But the Earth gives off a beat of energy at about 8 hertz, and it's a huge, long wave. Okay, so we've got these huge, long waves down at the bottom. Then up at the top, the highest we know of right now is ultraviolet light, and these are just tiny little waves. They're so close together, they're just minute. But it's all just one big band of energy. Because we have language, we've split it up into lots of different names. Down here at the bottom is infrasound. So these are all the waves below sound, which is the lowest wave that we can sense with anything that we're aware of. So sound is a pretty low waves, but all that is below that we call infrasound. This is how elephants communicate, for instance. It was always a big mystery how an elephant that was hurt in the desert would, within a day, have lots of elephant friends around it, and no one could figure out why. And it's because their communication is lower than what we can hear. It's in infrasound. Some people can feel infrasound, or this could be called magnetic waves. Or waves that are lower than what we can hear. Some people can feel them on the body. I maintain we all can. So touch is a way that we can access this part of the spectrum. Then we move up to waves that are a little faster, and it's the realm of sound, what we call sound. And we happen to be able to access this part of the spectrum through our ears and through our bones and through our skin, like we talked about the other day. That's just so happens that that's our window into this part of the spectrum. A little faster than sound are TV and radio signals, which we can't hear till we convert them, you know, into sound. But some people can feel those. Sometimes you have a high ringing in your ears, and it could be you're picking up this higher band of the energy field. Okay, so who knows how we're picking that up? Maybe a little bit by sound, maybe by touch, maybe other ways. Or maybe we have just a little bit of a blank spot where we're not designed to pick up any part of that bit of the spectrum. A little faster waves than that is infrared light. We call it heat. If you were a snake, you would see a red blob around each of us because they can see what we call heat. Their eyes are designed to access that part of the spectrum as light. Most of us can't. Some people can see auras and colors around people, and that's probably in the spectrum of infrared and light. So there, we definitely are designed to access this part of the spectrum through touch, because we can feel heat and cold. We're very sensitive that way. And then can perhaps access it through vision as well. All right, then we move up into even faster waves, and now we're into what we've named light. And that's how, like we talked about yesterday, we get color by light reflecting off things. So it's through our vision that we happen to access that part of the spectrum. People have also been bringing up how you can feel colors. Because again, all of this is just energy. So whatever way you can pick it up, you are sensing it. And I've never done this, so I don't think we'll test it here in public. But I know of times where people have passed around colored objects to blindfolded folk until people could start to tell the color by the feel. So in this part of the spectrum, we've got at least two senses that access it, our vision and touch. Then, faster than the waves of light, we happen to have named it ultrasound, and we use that in medicine to take pictures of, you know, bellies and babies and things. And we turn it into a picture that we can see. And so, how do we access that? I don't know. Maybe some way, maybe not. Higher than that, then, at this whole upper end, the tiny, tiny short waves are ultraviolet light. That's what we've named it. Birds and bees see this. So the flowers, like those white daisies out the window, just look white to us. They might be bright magenta to a bee, depending on what the ultraviolet reflection is at. We just don't happen to typically to see that.
You could put feeling under there because that's what causes suntan or whatever.
Oh, okay, good. So we've got, right, we're obviously affected. And like we were talking about in vision, one of the vision therapy exercises is closing your eyes and looking at the sun because the ultraviolet lights actually will relax the muscles and, in ways that we don't exactly know, improve vision. So that's been used for years. Okay, any thoughts or comments or additional insight onto the spectrum?
The only thing to add with the TV radio signals is that if you reach for an aerial on a radio, you become pick her up.
You're right.
You know, when you're far off,
you're right,
in northern Minnesota where nothing works, if you touch it, you love it.
And you get a spark.
Sometimes.
Too.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Sometimes. Yeah. So really, feelings under there.
I don't know. You are a conductor then of the signal.
Yeah.
Your source.
I don't know what you would call that, but right. You become
the wave. So it does say that it is in our, we are absorbing it.
Right.
It's scary, but that's...
Yeah, we're part of this. The thing is, each one of us is giving off a wave somewhere along it. Well, we're somewhere around in here is what we emanate. So when we're sensing each other, we are, you know, typically we can feel the heat of a person. Some people can see some of the aura of that person. When we're thinking and having emotions, they're doing experiments now with electrodes on the head and then progressively further away. And your thoughts make different signals out into the air. So we are constant, we're giving off signals all over this spectrum, just like everything else, just like these rocks and the scarves. Yeah.
Would you accept auras in that area?
Yeah, they're probably right in here. On the cusp of infrared light and light, because not everybody sees them, but you can see them. So it's probably on the periphery between what we call heat and light. Do you see them?
Accept them.
Yeah. What color am I today? Black? Does anyone else see auras?
There's no piece of good about whether you even photograph them. What's it called?
Carillion.
Carillion, yeah. What do you think of that?
It's totally doing it.
Because a lot of scientists don't accept, you know, carillion at all.
I think, camera film can pick up things that we don't see.
Yeah.
So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just curious.
I think it's totally doing it.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is on TV and radio. I was working in a lab, and a friend of a friend was referred to me. She was hearing some beeping noise that was really irritating her all the time. She didn't know where it was coming from. It was worse at night than the day. It was keeping her up and so on. It was like the high-pitched tone that you're talking about. And the doctors said, well, it's just tinnitus, but she claimed it wasn't. And what I was going to do, we had what we call a Faraday cage, which is a wire mesh that you can put things in, and it's protected from TV and radio signals. Yeah. And I said, if you get in here, we can at least see if that's what it is.
Right.
She wouldn't get in. So.
But she wouldn't.
I don't know why. I mean, it was big enough for a person. There was nothing scary about it, but she didn't want to do it. So I never know what the answer
is. Oh, man, I want to know now. Because, you know, there's always the stories about the person who picks up the ball game through their filling and stuff like that. I never know. Is that true?
Well, think about the old, maybe you're too young, the old crystal sets we used to build, but, you know, all we had was a piece of crystal, a wire, we had it wrapped, and then 96 feet of line.
Sure.
And why did that work? I mean...
And what did it do?
Well, pick up radios.
Really?
Was it just a little piece of crystal?
That's all.
I mean, you didn't have no batteries at all.
Sure.
No batteries. You know, it just worked.
David can explain this why.
Okay, let's hear it.
The wire picks up the radio signal, and then that vibrates the crystal, which makes an electric signal that you can run to your wire. So the crystal is what turns the signal from the antenna into something that can run the speaker.
Okay.
And a little vibrating.
Mm-hmm. But it's still, you know, no batteries included.
Right. Just taking it from the air and turning it into something we can hear.
Yeah.
Right. Interesting. Well, I'm going to just introduce a few of the senses, and we may refer to the spectrum. But this is just to set the stage for that there really is no separation between light and sound and all that. Those are just names that we have slapped on certain portions of the spectrum. So some of these unacknowledged senses fall within the boundaries or areas that we don't usually have, that we don't have a name for one of our senses. One sense I'd like to have you experiment with right now is balance. So stand up. I know. It won't be too hard. Okay, now just stand on one foot and do whatever you need to do to balance on that. And just pay attention to what your body's doing to maintain this. Like I feel my ankle going da-da-da-da-da. In my arms. Okay. Okay, if you can't do it, you're balancing even when you're standing on 2 feet, too.
I know, I have poor sense of balance.
Okay. I should have had you sign a waiver before the class. Okay, so just find this, you know, where it's fairly well maintained. Whoops. Because then we're going to change it. Okay, now close your eyes and stay balanced. Okay, and it's harder, unless you're different. Okay, you can stop now before someone gets hurt. So there's a don't sit on me. So balance is a combination of a few senses. Right there you saw that vision is part of balance, but it's not all of balance because you could do it, you know, with your eyes closed, but it was just harder. So vision is one sense that's at play. The other one, do it again with eyes open. Another one that's at work for this sense is called the vestibular sense or vestibular system. And that's, in my crude explanation, there's three looping canals in your inner ear that are full of liquid. And their job is to tell you when you are diagonal or tipped forward. They give reports because every time you move a little bit, the fluid sends signals to your brain saying, oh, we're off center, you need to adjust. So those three things, those are at work, whether you can see or not. Then that's the same system that lets you know if you're upside down or not when you're underwater, where gravity's not helping you and You can have your eyes closed and you still know if you're upside down. That's the vestibular sense. Well, then a third, hey, do it one more time. You can switch feet if you're getting tired. The third, at least third sense that's at play is one that we mentioned in the touch seminar, which is the proprioceptive sense, that inner sense of touch that's wound through tendons and joints, inside muscles, in organs. And it's the one that reports to you the position of your arms, what shape your face is in at the moment, every bit of information about the condition of your stomach, empty flow. So this is the one that's making the ankle go adjust all the time, because it's doing all the reporting from the inside of muscles and joints. Okay, I can stop. All right, so you can sit down. Was your workout for the day?
Yes.
Joey Dragon.
Do you know which one's more important, the inner ear or the proprioceptive?
Which one's more?
What's doing more work for the balance? No.
I would guess it's the vestibular sense is the core of balance, because people that get head injuries, let's test it. Okay, you gotta stand up again. And you need a little room. Because actually, I wanted to do this anyhow, but it will help answer your question. Just find a place where you can turn around four times fast and then try to balance. So just. And then just see how it goes. Dream on. So the proprio is still at work, but the vestibular is all mixed up. So I think it's the vestibular sense that's the core.
I think we support you.
Okay.
I'm not sure that's tested some more.
Yeah. No, we just ate. Well, go find a merry-go-round and get you into your stomach. If that's one of the things that sometimes I'm asked to do work with, like 12-step programs of people that have been addicted to substances to get high, to find other ways to get high. And one of them is getting dizzy, like swinging. That's true. It feels good. I mean, you can get sick too, but you just got to know your limit. Four spins. I'm a four spin. That's my good one. But it is a way to you mix yourself up a little bit, just like drugs do. And it feels good, but it doesn't harm you. Unless you're Elmer and you fall down into the next person.
In the same line, have you done any study on this with seasickness and the ability to finally adjust? Like, I had commercial fish 3 years when I was going to college, and the first time out was not good. We already talked about it. But after the season went on, I wasn't bothered. You know, I could be down cooking or cleaning fish down in a hole or whatever, but the brain must do something, but I don't know. Have you done anything with that?
I don't.
You know, like if we're spinning around and all doing this, and the more you do that,
if you get accustomed, you must. But I don't know
how that works. Where the brain does some more work, and I don't know what it would do. But
yeah, well, any sense that you use a lot gets better. All of them, you know, except hearing, gets better if you use it. So if you're on a boat and you're constantly, you know, adjusting a little bit, you're going to get really fine-tuned. And if I would assume that gets better. Yeah, it's a good question.
Do you know why, when you get seasick, or to prevent it, sometimes they have those little wristbands that the pressure point right here? Do you know how that is connected to the
I don't. I know there's lots of tricks for seasickness, like ginger, eating ginger.
I think the wristband thing has to do with acupressure. It has to do with Eastern medicine, where they talk about the meridians that pass through all bodies and where they intersect. And for some reason, just like if you have a really bad headache, if you press really hard on the webbing between your first finger and your thumb, it sometimes helps make the headache go away. And it has to do with, like, the energies in your body and stuff.
Yeah, they've got a whole map of the body and the meridians and what points connect.
I mean, if you ever went for acupuncture for somebody people spend years studying acupuncture in Eastern medicine, and it really does work. I mean, it's one of the few things, that few Eastern medicines that really stands up to all the tests that have been.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a far more acceptance in that culture of this idea that everything is energy. you know, and that's sort of new agey to us, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good question. Okay, so balance is, we call it balance, it's really at least three senses, maybe. Vision, vestibular, and proprioceptive. There's another sense that I think bears mentioning, and I call it the solar sense. And this is mastered by the pineal gland that's in the center of your, the front center of your brain, really ancient, primitive. It's the only part of your brain that there's only one of. Everything else there's is doubled. So this ancient gland is in everything from fish to lizards, birds, mammals. Pretty much every moving around creature has it. Plants have it in a different way. And what it does, one of the many things it does, is it keeps us in line with night and day. You may have heard about the experiments where people go and live in a cave, total darkness, for X amount of time. And over time, they keep a regular wake-sleep cycle, but it gradually gets longer and longer and longer, and it maxes out, at least as far as they've let it go, to at about a 26-hour day. Mm-hmm. So with the, after, you know, 3, 4, 5 months, they come up, they are way off, like they changed time zones, because they were not getting shaped up every day by the light and the dark of the sun. Lizards, they do a lot of experiments on animals, because they're not people. But like if you put tin foil over the pineal gland of a lizard, theirs is right on the surface of their skin.
You can see it.
Yeah, it's that little
look at it.
Dip.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you cover that up, and they'll bask in the sun like till they bake. Till they boil, you know, they're just totally out of it. Or they'll start breeding double time, you know, way more often than they're supposed to. And they can't find their way home because they do that by the slant of the sun on the pineal gland. So they're really messed up. Birds use it in migrating and navigating. And there's, again, been experiments done where you don't let a bird see the sun and stars and its other navigational tools, in those cases, it will just use the ambient ultraviolet light on the pineal gland and see direction. So they use it a lot. They're very sensitive to it. We use it just unconsciously. It keeps us online. And every day, the amount of light is different on this planet. It's either longer or shorter than the day before. Every single day and night is different. So the only way that we could still be reasonably on track is through this solar sense. And I want to just have you try something. Close your eyes, and then look down toward the ground with your eyes closed. And then look out at one of those windows with your eyes closed, just to notice how much light comes through your eyelids. And then go back down. And look back up again. There's controversy as to how the pineal gland is stimulated. Is it from ultraviolet penetrating your body, or is it through the eyes? And what I've mostly seen is that it is through the eyes, even when the eyes are closed. So there's another way that this solar sense works, not just off the sun directly, but the moonlight, which is sunlight reflected. And it's very observable in women because before the advent of electricity and lights on till midnight, menstrual cycles would just be right with the moon, either on the new moon or full moon. And some of that was hormonal because women that live together will donate to each other hormones. But even a woman alone, like one of my roommates is an Outward Bound instructor, and she'll be out for months at a time, and instantly her cycle will go to the moon. And she may be the only woman, so it's not just a hormonal sharing. And the idea is that even moonlight will come through the eyelids. So this is starting to be accepted much more by Western medicine, even in fertility clinics, for instance, to maximize a woman's fertility. You want the menstrual cycle to be about a lunar cycle. That's the most fertile and comfortable cycle. And a way to do that is darken the sleeping area for all nights of the month except 3 nights around full moon, and then have a low light on for those 3 nights. And the body will think it's moonlight and will trip onto the moon. And I've tried it, it works. Yeah. So so the solar sense is releasing hormones for night and day. As night starts to come down and less light is getting to the pineal gland, it starts to release hormones that make us drowsy. What is it?
Melatonin.
Melatonin. Which you can now buy in the store for a fair amount of money, or you could just darken your sleeping area and let your body do this trick. Yep. Any questions or comments about solar sense?
Well, let me ask you this, now that we just sold our home. Home-wise, it was real dark, you know, the room and everything. Now we're in an apartment for a period of time, about 9 months now, going to be. But there was never total darkness, the Venetian blind type thing.
Yeah.
Does that affect your sleep cycle otherwise?
It can.
I didn't know.
Yeah, I mean, if insomniacs are advised to darken or wear blinds while they sleep, because your body needs the darkness to do the sleep hormones.
Because there's security lights around, so
yeah.
It's never quite dark.
I used to live in an apartment where I had to put a black towel over my closed shade because so much light. Yeah. And then I had to wear earplugs because I had noisy neighbors. And I plugged my nose because they smoked. So I basically had to quit living to remain there. Yeah. Other questions or comments? So you're connected to the moon and the sun constantly. Just a little point of interest. Our wake-sleep cycle will get longer if we're in darkness, and a bee's will get shorter.
Huh.
Just, it does. Bees also use their pineal gland to orient their hives a certain east-west direction, and every hive will be at that exact angle. So there's some advantageous thing for that. But I don't know what it is. Does anyone hear? Okay. All right. Another unacknowledged sense is the magnetic sense. This could also be called the homing sense. I'm not exactly sure. Now, maybe someone in the room knows where on the spectrum this would be. But this is the magnetic emanations of the Earth that are different if there's rock under the ground versus water versus a cavern. And people and animals can feel these differences. It's somewhere low, but I'm not sure exactly where. Animals, it's been found, rely very heavily on the magnetic lines of the Earth. And you can get maps that show, you know, like topo maps, only they're showing the magnetic energy lines of the Earth. So whales, porpoises, lots of sea creatures follow these lines like highways. And what they're finding now, you know, when whales beach themselves, it always seems like, duh, it's kind of shallow here. Why did you go there? And it's where those magnetic lines happen to just swerve right into the shore. And if they're not paying attention, they're just following the highway. They'll beach. So there's a good reason. And birds, again, they'll use not only that pineal gland, but when they're flying at night, which they often do, they can feel the magnetic lines of the Earth against their bodies as they fly, and that keeps them oriented the way they're going.
Is that the reason birds fly into your windows?
I don't know.
No, that has to do with their inability to see the windows well, or if the windows are reflecting, like the trees around them.
Oh yeah, they just don't notice
that it's a window.
I can't believe my windows are that clean.
It's like dirty leaves.
Yeah.
you can avoid that if you put a silhouette of a bird up in your window. There's actually cutouts that you can get. Just put a black silhouette of a bird in your window, and they won't do that anymore. Because then they realize there's a barrier there.
I have just to really wash my windows. Clean the windows quite frequently.
Yeah.
Because there's bird goo on them?
Well, they do,
yes.
The windows.
And,
yes, but I think our robin has
and feathers.
Them. that Robin, that was in the window.
Oh, sure, sure.
Because he was hitting like yeah. this.
The territorial sense, that's called.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the living room windows and the dining room deck door are across from each other. And I wonder if they sure. don't see all the way through mm-hmm. and think it's a throughway.
Sure. Well,
that's what
yeah. Yeah,
they find out that it isn't.
Well, if you put up bird silhouettes and they're still smashing in, then I would say you have a magnetic line problem. But I would try. I should try your suggestion.
Actually, this lady said sun catchers.
Were the sun catchers.
No, oh, is it?
Well, just reflecting so they realize that there's something there.
Yeah. I do. They have those in the deck door.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you have them on the first door, the window that they go through.
I don't have any in the living room.
I can ask you questions. Yeah. Okay, how about this one? Water witching and then also holding the two clothes hangers. Have you done this?
I haven't tried
witching.
And then
they just come together certain things.
Right. That's, I'm glad you know.
The clothes hangers are pretty straightforward. They'll work, I think, on anybody.
It doesn't matter what you hold.
Yeah.
Yeah, the material is irrelevant. Mm-hmm. But it's considered the magnetic sense that mm-hmm. the dowsing or water witching does, and not exactly understood how, but a lot of people, even just you know regular people, can take a clothes hanger or a thin stick or something and walk and just pay attention and it'll dip or it'll tremble when there's a change.
Yeah, the clothes hangers just cross electrical or water.
Okay.
You mean you take two?
They do it for oil.
Yeah, well, you just cut them, you know, and just make them into right angles and just hold them loose in your hands and just walk. Mm-hmm. As you come across a water line or a electrical line, they'll just go.
And have you done it?
Oh, yeah.
Do you water witch?
Well, not water witch. My godfather showed me that. long since dead. But he had a well on his farm.
Uh-huh.
And I laughed at him. He says, well, let's go cut.
Yeah.
And he went out there and he had me, I could do it by myself, but he just guided me and that thing went.
Yeah. Yeah, supposedly it is the magnetic sense.
I don't know.
Yeah.
That was a little harder for me. The clothes hangers seem to work for a lot of people.
It's the same idea. It will just indicate a change because the beat of energy is changing. So something's going to happen. They also do it for oil. Oil companies, the large pipeline companies, employ a dowser. And there's even map dowsing. I do not get how that would work because I can't see how the magnetic sense would work. That's probably just good predictions. But out in the real world, the idea is you just hold something and you hold your arms out so that they get a little tired and then they'll be more sensitive to any little change. So that's something to try here. I was going to try that before.
Yeah, I've had pliers and stuff where you can do it real quick.
Well, we'll have to do a field trip. We'll go witching for a while.
Yeah, I could walk out here instead of smelling, we're all calling Myers.
What are they doing now?
Go the wrong way.
Yeah, and it was never believed that, you know, that was sometimes people were persecuted for that skill. Mm-hmm. It was never believed that was real. And now it's been found that humans have magnetite in our brains, just like every animal that navigates or migrates or uses the magnetic field. It's all you need is a little bit of magnetite in your body. And in dolphins, it's between their skin and their skull. And in butterflies, I think it's in their stomach, the ones that fly 2,500 miles. Anyway, you just need it in your body, and then you can sense this. And we have it.
Or I had one with wind-up watches. Couldn't wear them. They would stop. You know, when we were first married, she had a real time with that. And then now with the battery power, there's no problem. But she stopped.
Her energy must
over time. They just
interesting.
It wouldn't work for her.
I was on a bear research project once where they were wild bears, but they had been collared. And they were accustomed to a person being about as close as me to the door. And the idea was you just follow them for 24 hours and sleep where they sleep and all that and just observe what a wild bear does. And I was I was partnered with this big famous hunter guide guy who, I mean, I had even read stuff of him and so I really, you know, respected him. as an authority. Anyway, we were partners on this thing. And at the end of our 24 hours, we were supposed to make our way back to the research station. Well, we didn't have compasses or flashlights or any weird stuff like that that would mess with a bear. So you were just supposed to kind of know. Well, bears just, they go everywhere, man. They will walk through a swamp and they will charge up cliffs and they are amazing. So we had no clue where we were. And it was cloudy the whole time we were out. So, you know, I had lost my north-south orientation right away. Anyway, the only thing we had left to go with, and there wasn't moss on the north side and all that stuff. It's not always as packed as that. All we were left with was an instinctual kind of, huh, what feels like home? And I thought, man, I just think the station is that way. And he said, I just really think it's that way. So what do you do? Well, I acquiesced to him because I figured he's been out in the field all these years and all that. And he was wrong. And I was right. And I thought, I could tell. I just knew it was over there, but I don't know how. There was an interesting experiment done in England where they took a group of people and they strapped metal bars on their head. And half of them, it was just some non-magnetic, just metal. And the other half of the group had some highly magnetized bar, and no one knew which they had. Then they put them all on a train, and they, you know, made the train go all over Tarnation. And after a day or so, they let them off the train, and they just said, which way is home? And so they all just, you know, kind of turned around and pointed at what felt like home. And the ones that had the magnetized bar on their head, they were totally screwed up. Every single one of them was pointing a different direction. And the ones that hadn't had their magnetic sense messed with were more than half accurate, you know, more than chance. So it was just an interesting, but then that was repeated and it wasn't as conclusive. So it's still not, you know, the jury is still out on that. But it's clear that we do have some of this magnetic sense. And so it's a matter of paying attention and trying water witching.
Now, it's strange.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Water witching with a stick is, I still have problems with that one, but it worked. I saw it.
Yeah, oh, it works. They do it in Wisconsin. It's the cheap way to get your well dug.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any other comments or questions about the magnetic? Yeah.
I've seen in some of these little catalogs that come to the house, these braces or waistbands where they have magnets in it, and foot pads that have magnets in it, and all this good stuff that wristbands that have magnets in it, it's going to improve everything. Really?
I'm a skeptical. I mean, I think you can put magnets in your mattress and all kinds of stuff. And I would not do that until I understood what it was doing. Because it could help you or it could mess you up. Mm-hmm. You know, just because it's a magnet doesn't mean it's good. It's like the same with crystals. Just because it's a crystal, you know, and that rock has a certain magnetic energy that can be used for healing or for that little contraption, it doesn't mean that you know how to use it. Yeah. It's like, it would be like saying, well, heat is healing. Well, yeah, but sometimes no. You know, it just depends how you use it. Yeah, so I don't know. I don't know how to use magnets. So I wouldn't buy one until I did.
Well, with your description of knowing your way, so on, from magnetic forces, if you've got a bunch of magnets on you, you're going to be all screwed up, aren't you?
Well, I would think so. That's what I would guess. Yeah. So how many did you buy?
I didn't.
Yeah. All right. Other comments or questions? Okay. I'll talk about one more that's proven, and then we'll delve into the world of woo-woo. The woo-woo world, where it's not proven it exists, but we don't know how, so we have to decide, does it exist or not? But the one other sense that's just sort of interesting to know you have is called the trigeminal sense. And it's this web of nerves right up the front of your face. And you really experience it like when you go get Chinese takeout and there's that white mustard. Or that, yeah, that really vile stuff. You know, a little bit of that goes, it's like a blast of air up your face. And it clears your sinuses and it like makes your vision brighter and tingles up your forehead. And that's the, it's stimulating the trigeminal sense. Menthol does that too, like cough drops that just go, it's like gas going up your nose and your face. That's stimulating the trigeminal. And I don't exactly know what it's for, except, you know, I have guesses that it might be for, to make us have the suckling instinct when we're infants, because, or it makes smokers like smoking. A lot of it is just the stimulation of all the nerves right up in the front of the face, and the smoke stimulates the trigeminal sense. So I'm not sure why we were given it, but it's there, and it's interesting. When you have a Hall's menthol lymphatic cough drop, you think of your trigeminal sense. All right, well, at breakfast today and at dinner yesterday, everyone's starting to talk about their, well, in the sauna last night, it was ghosts, the ghosts of Holden, and all the people that have seen ghosts and spirits, and just these topics of things that people experience, but we don't know how, and not every single person experiences it. That it brings us into the world of sensing, either on the spectrum, or maybe the spectrum is huge, or maybe there's another one going another direction. We don't know. And to think we do, I believe, is arrogant. So the approach I take to people's experiences and sensations is that it's totally possible, and they're totally real. We just don't get how. There's a lot of, does anyone have an experience they would like to relate? Because there's a lot of directions to go, and we'll just start with Earl? No, he says not me. Oh, Christian.
Yeah. If we believe in a Holy Spirit, we'd better jolly well believe there are other spirits. I mean,
good
are you going to explain that to your kids?
Yeah, we already believe there's at least one. Yeah. So who's to say we can't see it?
Yeah,
that's a good point. Right. Who's to say?
Talking about out-of-body experiences?
Oh, that could be one.
Okay, or near-death, or?
That could be one. Oh, there is so, I mean, the range suddenly explodes into astral projection, ESP, oh God, what are the different...
Well, you're talking about where you pick up the phones and you're ready to call somebody and they're there.
Right.
Well, my mother used to do that to me, and I didn't like it. I said, don't do that.
Yes.
You know, I didn't have it wrong, I just picked it up and... She had dialed through.
Yeah.
And she was there, and I was intending to call her. And it,
right.
Yes.
Right.
And wife and I do that some, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And a break. Yeah,
my mom and I also, like when I say something, she's like, I was just about to say that.
Uh-huh.
A lot.
Yeah.
My dad and I have something different than that. It's more like premonitions, not just like a phone, but... my grandfather passed away 2 years ago, and you know, we both predicted exactly when it was going to happen. So we called a lot of people in the family to go to the hospital, and we were all there when he died. So I mean, we've done things like that. When my mom almost like heard herself lying to me, it was going to happen, and could warn her.
Huh.
So we get premonitions.
Okay, so you get a little hint of the future, yeah.
My stepsister's friend. She sees colors on people, and she was walking through the hall one day, and she saw one of the really popular kids having this black hood and carrying a bloody knife. And she got like really freaked out and stuff. And then like a little while later, she saw this like other kid. He was like all mangled up and stuff, and he died like during the summer of that year.
Was it the first kid's fault?
Yeah.
No, he died in a car accident or something.
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
And she like sees like she like blinks her eyes, and like if you're happy you're like yellow. She stays away from black.
Mm-hmm.
Black is really bad.
Yeah.
The friend in visiting in Michigan, lives down in California. I'm in Tacoma, thought of her out of the blue, don't know why, and got home, and there was a phone message from her just about that same time. Another friend, my closest friend, since 1938, at certain places we could be together, and without saying a word to anybody, start singing the same song in pitch that was way back there, but it had nothing to do with anything going on now.
Yeah.
And it just happened.
Yeah. These are great examples of stuff that does happen.
Sure.
And it's up to us to decide what meaning or explanation or belief do we want to put on that. Yeah.
Our daughter was about 8 years old. We moved away from our first parish about 4 years before that, 3 years before that. Hadn't mentioned this one justice of peace in town, but he used to be around the house, come and call and visit with Lula. And all of a sudden one night, 3 years after we'd lived there, we were saying prayers with our eight-year-old, and she said, just out of the clear blue, and dear God, please bless Mr. Stebbins, be with him. And we found out later that he had been kicked out of town, and he had gotten into some trouble with some young women that had caused a problem for him, and was really having an awful time. So I think God uses these premonitions very often as this person needs to be prayed for, if you think of it.
Yeah, that's a great, that same yeah. point was brought up at the breakfast table today. Yeah. Someone who knew far ahead of time that a friend of hers would be getting pregnant and giving a child up for adoption long before it happened. And that what that friend later told her after this did come true, and the person who had the premonition said, you know what, I knew that was going to happen. And the friend said, you know, you were the most understanding person I had, or you, that permission allowed her to be the support that this person needed.
The Bible says, too, we're surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, and it talks about the spirits in the world. I don't know why we have so much problems with gearing into
that. Well, I think in this culture there's such a huge split between science and spirituality, and it's actually coming now with quantum physics. That's so great because they're totally merging. All is one. It's proven scientifically as well as, you know, ancient belief. A lot of the ancient mystic beliefs are now being proven scientifically, which I think is no surprise that everything's congruent.
But if we believe in the power of angels and the Satan's spirits, like, the different books of Screwtape Letters, etc. But if you believe in power of good and evil, personified in spirits or whatever, and there is a battle going on, it kind of, I kind of see our prayer then as being a source of empowerment that God has asked us to use to help on the side of good in the world.
And that would be a way to explain it, and I would just, in total agreement with that, you could put it into a science-y explanation too, or theories, and this has been done, of that what you might call forces of good and evil might be certain parts of the electromagnetic spectrum, and prayer having power over that. Well, we know that when we have intention and emotion and thoughts, we know that we're changing the ways around us. We've proven that. Well, so we have good intentions, good thoughts, and that affects, you know, that sends out waves into the atmosphere. I think spiritual and science is totally congruent.
I don't think that that's been discounted by the scientific community, at least not in my lifetime, you know, I mean, and not in my mother's lifetime, as far as I know. It's not that the scientific community discounts spirituality completely, but science likes to understand how things happen. Right. They don't like to simply accept that crystals help you.
Right.
They want to know how it happens, and that's a key element. I think that if anything, science supports the ideas of that you've presented today more strongly than anything else, because science is the one that says that energy becomes matter and matter becomes energy, and it's all congruent.
But that's recent science. That's very
that's
recent.
Since the early 50s. Part of this century, I think. So,
yeah. If you're or, and for sure since Einstein.
Yeah.
But even early part of the century, that is just a minute drop in the development of human culture. Mm-hmm. And the you know what we have is the weight, this massive train of human mm-hmm. culture mm-hmm. that has said, that has persecuted people who said, you should wash your hands before you help give birth to someone, mm-hmm. Because there might be like things we can't see
right.
that are killing people, and they, you know, they were kicked out.
Sure.
You know, so and that was 1800s or right. what, whenever we discovered germs.
Right.
Before that, so it's. I agree with you that now science is more open. It still does not endorse anything that's not repeatable, provable right. in. Under control conditions.
True.
And the things we're talking about aren't yet. They try. They try. I mean, there's a lot of experiments going on. Well, Edgar, what was his name? The astronaut that went to the moon. Did an unauthorized ESP. What's his name?
Mitchell.
Edgar Mitchell. Did an unauthorized telepathy experiment mm-hmm. from the moon to Earth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's going on. Yeah.
Well, Larry Dossey, does that ring a bell with anybody? About control experiments with prayer.
Yeah.
Oh.
Prayer is good medicine.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I cannot get my mind around it.
Right. Well, and I think he was the one that did where people didn't even know they were being prayed
right.
for.
Yeah.
And
right.
the people praying did not even know the person.
Right. A double
right.
blind.
A really double blind.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, Cass.
I read a book about, I forget the title, but it's about. These people in Australia, they're Aborigines, and they could read each other's mind, like just talk within their mind without speaking. And but we, you know, it's not very common in our culture, but we also have like telephones and all that stuff, and we don't use our brain, like our whole brain. So maybe if we get to the point where we use our whole brain, we'd be able to do that.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good point. We don't practice these things. First of all, we don't
the gal that went with the Aborigines. I have a book. I don't remember the name of it. It's real good.
Something.
And she went with the Aborigines. What?
Oh yeah.
Message Down Under.
Yes.
It's not a true story though. It's. I've been to Australia before and met some Aborigine people, but the walkabout thing is true. But it's also with like the magnetic or whatever you're talking about. They can find mm-hmm. direction
yeah.
and they go through. I mean, most of Australia is like desert and that, and they can just. And they find their own ways and make their own, you know, paths and live off the land.
Right.
I've experienced
that too, and it's just absolutely amazing. Out in the archive. Just amazing what they can do.
Yeah, because they believe it.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So it's available to them.
Far ahead of us.
Or are ahead of us.
Well, you know, I think too, along with this, blueberry picking in northern Minnesota, I've done that, where if you panic, mm-hmm. you can mm-hmm. be very lost.
Yes.
Yeah.
But if you'll just sit down, relax, and do a little thinking, you can walk yourself out.
Right. Good
and letting go. I think that, like a lot of this stuff too, we are such a complex society of TV and radio and all this.
Right.
And I know that feeling of where am I?
Yeah. It's so neat that they have nothing to fall back on.
Yeah, but if you just relax.
Not now they're knowing more and more, of course, but then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of like your story about which way is out.
Right.
This.
I could bring in with a holding connection. I think Elmer knows this one. When Emily and I got lost on the lower Copper Trail, we were out June 4th, 1981. The two of us were going to head out, and they were going to pick us up down to Loose Harbor and bring us back. And terrible, we didn't get lost on the trail, but she got terribly wet. She sprained an ankle, all sorts of things. I've never had in my life as much control as I had at that point. And I saved her life a couple of times. She was going to go down, cascading down, and I grabbed her and everything. I've never had that control before, you know, since in my life. Just absolutely amazed that that could happen. I was in total control all the time. Never since.
And you didn't panic.
No, I didn't. That's exactly right. I didn't panic. Here was comes another one. There were 7 avalanche chutes between mm-hmm. here and our lower Railroad Creek exit.
Yeah.
And we had to go across each of these, and I had to pull her across each one, and 38 degree water, you know, and she was working, we had no food, no nothing. And I never panicked. The next day I did completely, I just sat in the jacuzzi and
then you were a wreck. Yeah.
One
you know,
day I had to do it and I did. That was the amazing thing. Yeah. You know,
You know, all three of your stories bring up just a really good kind of general point that I think would be good to close on. And that is that stress knocks your senses out. You know, overstress. A certain amount of stress is you know, enlivening. But like your example of panicking, or yours, that we have tons of radio and television. We have a highly overstimulated culture that doesn't allow this sort of peaceful, open, highly sensing nature like the Aborigines. If you can keep the stress down to where you're just alert and on, then you are a highly sensing being like these Aborigines. Mm-hmm. But our culture doesn't support that. It's a countercultural way to live. Mm-hmm. You know, you might give up TV, which would probably improve your telepathic abilities, you know, greatly. Because those things, if you ever go around with a meter in your home, even a TV that is off, that's plugged in, gives out an alarmingly large magnetic field. So, I mean, we have a lot of stuff that's messing with us in this culture. And it would be, just as you forge a lifestyle of prayer and health and whatever is your focus, reducing those stressors is a way to get alive. Yeah.
You say television, even though it's turned off, is giving off.
Yeah, if it's plugged in, you can walk with the electromagnetic meter. And like microwaves, even an off, but plugged in microwave, it's huge, man. It's 4 feet out. It registers in a danger zone.
Remember back to TV, it says don't play with the TV.
Or if
it's off.
Yeah.
If it's off because of that, you've got that power pack that.
Yeah.
You have a pacemaker, you're out.
You've been solving all sorts of mysteries. I'll ask you one.
Okay.
Why is it here a salmon spawns in a stream? And some, then 2 years later, they can come back to the same stream. And you can also take eggs from that salmon and put it in a hatchery. And then the fish, you put them in another stream, yet they'll come back to that same stream.
That one's beyond me. Yeah, I mean, there must be a magnetic encoding. There's also smell, they do have smell. But for the eggs, you know, I believe that can happen, but I don't know how.
I think a point to just mention as we close too is that even though we explain all these by long waves, short waves, magnetic, whatever, you know, it doesn't decrease the created, you know, power of our relationship in prayer to the source of all of our gifts of whatever.
It should give us an immense respect that this is an unbelievably organized and unbelievably
rich
system that we've been given, and we get to unlock it, you know, century by century. It's just so amazing.
Right.
Yeah, it's
and
congruent.
Totally.
Well, thank you for your participation and stories and twirling around.
Thank you for your wisdom.
You're welcome.